The following Dharma talk was given at Boundless Way Temple in Worcester, Massachusetts. The temple is an affiliate of Boundless Way Zen, a multi-lineage school of Zen Buddhism.
Case number 8 from Entangling Vines. Ling Yun Jichin of Fuzhou was enlightened upon seeing the blossoms of a peach tree. In a verse, he said, "For 30 years I sought a sword master. How many times have leaves fallen and new buds appeared? But ever since seeing the peach blossoms, from then till now, I have never doubted again." Later, he related this verse to his master, Guishan Lingyo. Guishan said, "Those who enlighten through circumstances never regress. Take good care of yourself." When Xuansha Shibei heard about this, he said, "Lingyun may well have been right, but I'll guarantee that his understanding was incomplete." Wu Tzu Fayan said, "You talk of complete and incomplete? 30 more years of training." Later, during a lecture, a monk asked Dachuan Puji about the verse. Dachuan said, "A thief has no peace of mind." So this particular koan doesn't appear in our koan collections, to my knowledge, but it is a famous story and is in a couple of Japanese koan collections, including this one, Entangling Vines. The story of this teacher, Ling Yun, seeing the peach blossoms and having an awakening is held very dear in the hearts of people of the way, and I'm going to talk a little bit more about it. But I also want to point out how delightful it is that this experience of this one teacher, at the time this happened to him, he was a student of the famous Zen teacher Guishan. Guishan, if you're following the soap opera up till now, is the person who is asked to be the cook of a monastery and demonstrates his understanding by kicking a jug of water off with his toes. And a very interesting guy in many ways. We don't know much about this student of his, Ling Yun. We just have a few of his writings and this story and the poem that he wrote, which is also a source of inspiration throughout the history of Zen, his poem, which I'll also go into a little bit more. And then one of the delights for me of this koan, I'd heard about him seeing the peach blossoms, being awakened. I'd heard this wonderful poem of his about his awakening. But all these comments by all the other teachers, a whisper down the wind, game of telephone of, "Did you hear what this guy said? Oh, well, I have an opinion about that. Oh, yeah, well, I have an opinion about what you just said. Oh, yeah, well, I have an opinion about what you just said." Until we finally get to the final line from this person, Dachuan Puji, who says, a thief has no peace of mind. So I actually looked up a bunch of stuff about this koan and some of the books we have. And there's one commentator who thinks all of these people were criticizing Ling Yun. But this isn't how I see it. I see this as the particular way that we keep each other honest in Zen. We take each other to task not for being right or wrong, but for only saying part, because none of us can say the whole. When we open our mouths to speak, the words come out, and words are inherently partial. So the way we save ourselves is to have each other, a community of people of the way who practice together, a community in my case of teachers. How wonderful to be sitting here this morning, surrounded by the other three guiding teachers of Boundless Way Zen. Of course, David Roshi, who has been my partner and obstacle for many, many years now. And Mike Sensei and Bob Sensei, who were just recently elected by the Boundless Way Zen Leadership Council at the suggestion of David and me to be their fellow guiding teachers of our parent organization, Boundless Way Zen. And there's something amazing to me. Some of you know, and if you haven't figured it out, we meet together. We have what we call teachers' meetings all through the day when you're taking showers and resting and taking walks and things. We're sitting upstairs debating the finer points of everything. And we don't agree with each other. We have our own views. And in that way, we keep each other honest. Of course, sometimes we do agree with each other, and then it's really terrific. But, yeah, really, is it terrific? I don't know. When we all agree, there's a danger, a shadow, that will ignore something important. So in this particular story, there's this man, Ling Yun. I'll come back to him in a little bit. But I do want to talk about all these comments. So first, his teacher praises him. And some of you have had that experience where your teacher praises you and you can go off then and just really get lost. Oh, my teacher thinks I'm fantastic and I answer to koan and I'm brilliant. And then in the next doksan, you get a new koan and, or a new instruction or a new reflection. And it's like, wait a minute, what just happened to my glorious awakening that you confirmed for me, my glorious understanding and wisdom? What just happened to that? So Guishan does this thing, this partial thing. He says to Ling Yun, those who enlighten through circumstances never regress. And this is a reference to two kinds of awakening. There's a text by Bodhidharma that also talks about this. We can awaken through the teachings, that is, through instruction, through having a teacher who guides us along the path. And something the teacher says or does, or maybe not even a personal teacher, but something in the liturgy book, a line, we can be awakened through instruction, through words. And this is an important part of our training to take to heart everything we hear and read about Zen in these wonderful excerpts from teachings. If we had a liturgy book that reflected all of the teachings, it would weigh a ton. It would weigh thousands and thousands and thousands of pounds. It would be impossible to bear around. So we have these excerpts. Sometimes that's how we awaken. We call it sometimes the turning word. So we come in to Doksan and the teacher says something and we don't hear it as words anymore. It just goes right into the heart. If there's a ripeness, if there's a willingness, if there's the kind of courage. One of you was mentioning to me how courageous one has to be to sit with our minds, our hearts, our bodies, this well of suffering, this well of experience, of sensitivity, of the heart being ready to take on things, how difficult it is and how much courage it takes. And the person who said this to me was already someone I had thought, whoa, you are so effing courageous. I am so in admiration of you. But it was much better to hear it from the student. I need to summon up my courage. It's, you know, whatever you come in with, fear, courage, anger, joy, bliss, always only part of it. But what that part is can be affirmed or redirected. So this is how we teach through words. But Ling Yun has been awakened through circumstances. That is, a ripeness was present in him, and he talks about it in his poem. A bird is singing outside. Thank you for that example. Sometimes we hear a bird song and it cuts right through us. Or in the case of Ling Yun, you see peach blossoms. Or a cardinal flew by the window earlier in our officers' meeting. Or the coolness of the air, or anything which we don't sit and think, oh gosh, that's a beautiful bird. I should open myself to that so that I can have an awakening experience. It's just and the terrible thing about Ling Yun's peach blossoms is, can you imagine, you know, this happened a couple of thousand years ago, and all the people who go wandering around trying to find the peach blossoms that will awaken you, or now you'll be looking for cardinals or listening for birds. It doesn't work that way. It's always a surprise. I have to say that this has happened to me a couple of times in my life. Once it was the sun coming up. Once it was, we used to sit facing screens, and it was the weaving on the screen in front of me. And then the little, Hakuin talks about the little, moments that make you dance. He talks about, stepping in mud. One of you stepped in dog poop the other day. One of you cleaned up the dog poop. Mm-hmm. All wonderfully ripe moments for awakening. yeah. Well, because the world is not divided. Even though our perception and our expression is divided, the world is just one piece, and every once in a while something appears and the wholeness reveals itself through the part. There's a saying in Zen that when we see the horns, we know the ox. So the little part, the screen in front of me, the white weaving and the shadows falling on it, just completely express themselves with no holding back. And for some reason, who knows what, I could make up a story about it. In that moment, there wasn't anything else. Maybe the clearest moment like that up till that moment in my life. My mind didn't say, screen, shadow, color. It was just, tweet, tweet, tweet. I can't make a sound of a screen, so I substituted a bird. So, he says, his teacher Guishan says, those who enlighten, who awaken through circumstances, never regress. So he's already setting up a split. He's saying people who awaken through a turning word are not as good as people who awaken through something in the world that that's touched their heart. This is an old saying. It comes from somebody way before Guishan. But, you know, when I read this, I think, all right, here goes the drama. We have an awakening experience, a teeny, teeny, tiny one, or a huge one, doesn't matter, or anything in between. And the story-making apparatus kicks in, and we start to tell a story about ourselves, about awakening, about our worth as people. These things don't happen. We hear a talk like this, and we think, oh, that's never happened to me. I've never seen peach blossoms. Damn it. What's wrong with me? Or a screen, or whatever. The world divides again. And this is how it works. It's not that the world stays whole, because we can't survive if we're living completely in wholeness. This is what we sometimes call Zen sickness, where everything is it. And boy, you know, the garbage is it. And the poop on my feet and the poop in my rag that cleans it up. Oh. That can get pretty obnoxious after a while. There has to be just a release into ordinary life once again. And so there is this opening and closing and opening and closing that talks about this in many spiritual traditions, not just ours. There's the awakening, and then we go back into delusion and then we awaken, and then we delusion, and then this wonderful thing happens. Some people hate spoilers, but then we realize that the delusion is also the awakening, and then we get in a new kind of trouble. It just goes on and on and on. How wonderful. And of course, Swansha, another teacher, hears the gossip about Guishan's student, Ling Yun, and he says, "No, Ling Yun may well have been right, but I guarantee his understanding was incomplete." Which is not a criticism, it's just a naming of something. If it wasn't incomplete, why would anyone do this practice? It's never complete. So there's a way to turn this around and say, good for you. You're on the path of incompleteness. You will never be able to rest in any kind of an insight that will take you off the path. This path is endless, and it only ends with the last out-breath, as far as we know, just based on ordinary knowledge. So it's incomplete, he says. I guarantee it, this teacher says. I guarantee it. And that's always true. What a wonderful teaching. But then, of course, in the little game that we're playing here, which is the most serious game of all, we talked the other day about the game of Go and how you put a piece on the board or you take a piece away and the whole board changes. And this is how life is, a very serious game where there are no winners and no losers because everybody's already won. Congratulations. So another teacher hears about this, Wutsu. Wutsu says, you talk of complete and incomplete, pointing out the danger of using any word that seems to have an opposite. Zhaozhou said, mu, which appears to mean no or not. But mu is not the opposite of anything. It's an expression of everything. And so the same thing here. The word incomplete is not opposed to complete. But just in case people get confused, Wutsu is here to say you talk of complete and incomplete. Two monks roll up the blinds and the teacher says, one gains, one loses. What? They both did the same thing. Do you get caught in gain and loss? Of course you do. We all do. There's no way out of this except to see it, to admit it, to see that the getting caught in right and wrong and good and bad is also the awakened heart manifesting itself. You talk of complete and incomplete, Wutsu says, 30 more years of training. I think he's selling us short. A lifetime of training. You might say Bodhisvaha, which one of our students, Nat Needle, has translated as yippee. And then later we get another teacher commenting, Dachuan Pujin, and he says, a thief has no peace of mind. We come across variations of this line in many of our koans, especially in the Blue Cliff Record, where people compare teachers to thieves. A teacher indeed is a thief. What is the teacher stealing from us? A teacher steals certainty. A teacher steals all the old narrative patterns that have kept us imprisoned in the glass bottle, that poor little goose that Bob talked about the other day, huddled inside, yearning to escape. But there's no escape because there's no way to get out without breaking the bottle. And the koan about the goose in the bottle specifically says, how do you get the goose out without breaking the bottle? That's why it's a koan. And so the teacher steals the container which has protected us all our lives from something that needs no protection. I want to read you something from Ling Yun. It's the only piece of writing I've come across from him. It comes from one of his Dharma talks. And you can feel in this line of his the experience that he had with the peach blossoms manifesting through his teaching. It, in truth, as far as we can tell, never left him. That first moment of shock, of full presence, of everything dropping away and there only being peach blossoms. No longer even Ling Yun, just peach blossoms. So this is what he says. Zen master Ling Yun entered the hall and addressed the monks, saying, "Among you, there are persons with various strengths and weaknesses." Maybe we'll just pause there. Right? All of us in this room have various strengths and weaknesses. Here's somebody who lived so many centuries ago, but the job description of being a human being hasn't changed very much. We all have our strengths, we all have our weaknesses, we all have our gifts, and we all have our limps, as David Roshi likes to say. Everybody is unique, as my first teacher used to say, but not special. Each of us manifests the Dharma and the longing for awakening and the yearning to be at peace in our own way. And every way is valuable, but it can be used as a glass bottle to trap us in. So Ling Yun goes on and says, "But you should all observe the vegetation of the four seasons, the leaves falling, and the flowers blooming. Events that have gone on for an incalculable eon. The gods, humankind, all the realms of existence, earth, water, fire, and wind, all of these things come to completion and pass away in the cycle of existence. Among you, there are persons with various strengths and weaknesses, but you should all observe the vegetation of the four seasons, the leaves falling, and the flowers blooming. Events that have gone on for an incalculable eon. The gods, humankind, all the realms of existence, earth, water, fire, and wind, all of these things come to completion and pass away in the cycle of existence. But when all of cause and effect is exhausted and the nether realms are finished, still, throughout the universe, not a single hair will have been created or taken away. When all of cause and effect is exhausted and the nether realms are finished, still, throughout the universe, not a single hair will have been created or taken away. There remains only a fundamental, numinous consciousness that is eternal. When I found this reading, I was very struck, as I said, by how his experience of the peach blossoms infused his own teaching. He urges us to pay attention to everything around us, to see not only the things themselves, but also the way that things transform and change in this cycle, which he says is not endless. Someday it'll all go away. He didn't know that someday the star that is our sun would go supernova and consume the earth, and he certainly didn't know about global warming. He knew, though, about life and death. He knew about being born and living and seeking aliveness and seeking the meaning of this great matter of life and death. And he knew that all things come to an end. But he says in that coming to an end, nothing comes to an end. Both statements are true. Not a single hair will have been created or taken away. Everything, we might say, to quote David's talk of the other day, shines with its own light. And that light never goes out. Yunmen's teacher, Guishan, once doubted this teaching, and he came in to see his teacher, Baijiang. And Baijiang listened to him go on and on, complaining about, you know, I can't find the spark, I don't believe this teaching about we all have our own light. And Baijiang said, okay, but would you please just go over to the fire stove and revive the fire for me? And Guishan went over and he searched and it was all ashes. And he looked at his teacher and said, it's all ashes. I cannot revive this fire. And so Baijiang got up from his seat, went over to the ashes, and he searched and he searched and he searched, and then he revealed a little spark at the bottom, and he blew on it and the wood came alight. And he turned to his student, Guishan, and he said, here it is. It's been here the whole time. And Lingyun is saying, and it will never disappear. So his poem, which is this famous poem that resonates through our Zen, for 30 years, I sought a sword master. A sword master, like a thief, is another way of talking about a Zen teacher. A master of the sword of Manjushri, the figure on our Guanyin altar here in the Zendo, up at the top, who holds a sword in his hand. Cutting through delusion, cutting through life and death. We call this sword the sword that kills and the sword that gives life. Because that's what it's like. The thief steals away all your certainties and stories about yourself, and the sword master cuts away anything that's in your way of hearing the wind, of seeing the peach blossoms. So Lingyun says, for 30 years, I have sought a sword master. Me too. And I've been lucky to find them again and again. Not just my Zen teachers, but my students and my good counselors and my teachers in psychology and mindfulness. Everyone who took me seriously and said, no. Cut it out. Stop doing this to yourself. For 30 years I sought a sword master. How many times have leaves fallen and new buds appeared? How many times have I missed this? I've been looking for somebody to do it for me. I've been looking to have a turning word given to me. I've been looking through books and poetry and gone from teacher to teacher to teacher and guide to guide to guide. And how many times have I missed it? You might say the peach blossoms were waiting for Lingyun. You might say that the Dharma, in whatever form it takes in this vast turning world, is waiting for you. And it waits with infinite patience. It's an invitation to see to your own true nature. It doesn't sit there expecting anything from you, but it waits and it waits and it waits. The peach blossoms had budded and fallen away. How many times? And then he says, but ever since seeing the peach blossoms, from then till now, I have never doubted again. We talk so much in Zen about cultivating the great doubt, which in some translations is the great anxiety, the great trembling and fear, as other people have called it. The great shaking in the heart. This is what causes us to seek and to long for and to listen and to be open. This is what causes us to stay on this path, which will never abandon us, even if we abandon it, or we get lost, or we get confused. And here is Ling Yun saying, from then till now, I have never doubted again. And my sense is, just wait a minute. Lingyuan Jichen of Fuzhou was enlightened upon seeing the blossoms of a peach tree. In a verse, he said, for 30 years I sought a sword master. How many times have leaves fallen and new buds appeared? But ever since seeing the peach blossoms, from then till now, I have never doubted again. Later, he related this verse to his master, Guishan Lingyo. Guishan said, those who enlighten through circumstances never regress. Take good care of yourself. When Suansha Shibe heard about this, he said, Ling Yun may well have been right, but I'll guarantee that his understanding was incomplete. Wu Tzu Fayan said, you talk of complete and incomplete? 30 more years of training. Later, during a lecture, a monk asked Dachuan Puji about the verse. Dachuan said, a thief has no peace of mind. May you all enjoy the taste of no peace of mind. Thank you. So please take care of yourselves and find a way to sit with some ease, and a reminder that this is being recorded, so as we engage in our Dharma dialogue, if you don't want your voice to be recorded, we'll switch it off. And please.
So, thank you. The first thing that arose for me was I would be horrified that one day I was going to have to recite this koan and remember all of those names. But then you said it's not far, so I'm like, okay. But what then arose for me was when you talked about peach blossoms and birds singing and birds flying by and everything happened was some of you were here the other morning, the early morning period, when I was sitting up in the Dokusan waiting chair and the cord on my stone mala broke. And I looked out, horrified of bothering every single person sitting in the zendo with this horrible noise that's happening. But I looked down and there were what, like 10,000 beads just everywhere. And I'm kind of baffled after the fact that obscene words didn't come out of my mouth at the time, but they didn't even arise. I just looked down and went, oh, that's really beautiful. And, you know, there's only 121 beads, but they were just sort of everywhere on the landing. And you stuck your head out of the Dokusan room to check on me, and Esther came out to see what happened. Very kindly brought me a plastic bag. But like the whole time, I was just like, wow. And then I was like, okay. And I just started picking them up, put them in the bag, and you came out, and you called it a wonderful opportunity, if I remember correctly. And it was just kind of neat. And, you know, I got up, and a bunch more fell out of my somewhere. And then finally, I got to see you. Dokusan ended and you rang the bell and I stood and one more fell out of bounds and all I could do was laugh. It's just hilarious. And it's just kind of neat just sort of being with it and not being upset or angry at all, just kind of going, alright, this just happened and all I can do is pick them up and they're still sitting in the bag that Esther kindly brought to me on the table at home. one day I'll fix it. But yeah, it was just kind of neat.
I'm reminded of how James Ford in particular used to talk about our practice as something that makes us accident prone. And the accident is awakening. Boom!
Thank you.
What came up for me is, by the way, thank you very much. Wonderful. What came up for me is it too late for me to smell the peach or to see the peach blossom? That's what came up. If only I had started this 25 or 30 years ago, I'd be so much further along. But here I am stuck. So, part of my angst, I guess, I'm sharing with you, but I really do wonder, you know, am I getting too old to really learn from this practice of Zen?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Sorry, Phil. Your only hope is if you get stuck somewhere.
Oh, well, that's no problem.
But of course those thoughts come up, if only. And if you start at 6 years old, you can think, if only I'd started at five. Or if only I had some life experience before I ran off into the monastery. So the mind is endless. In its devious way, right, to sidetrack you, right? This teaching that, you know, what we long for is here. So, Melissa, I so appreciated you talking about not fetishizing the peach blossom or, you know, looking, where, you know, where is it? Because it's right here. The reason we don't see it is it's too close. If it's the water we swim in, and this is not something that requires many years work, just a lifetime.
Thank you for a wonderful story. It's just a delightful story with all the strange names. The first thing that came up for me was a tremendous envy. This guy, okay, he had this awakening, and that was it. Like, he's like, never doubt it again. It's like, man. And then, you know, you said later, just wait a minute. Yeah. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So there is an opportunity for him to doubt again.
Oh, totally. I really was struck by, I hadn't read the poem in a long time, but I'd heard it before. From then till now.
Till now.
Right? He knew. And then, you know, a thief. What is this other guy? What's his name? Corbin? a thief has no peace of mind. Right? That is not a problem. Right? A teacher, in other words. If you've had these experiences, you should not be settled. Right, and I think that's what David was saying about not fetishizing.
Right.
It's a great word for it because we do. We fetishize so much stuff in Zen.
I want that back. I want it again.
Mm-hmm. I want it again. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and I think of both of your comments reflecting this yearning that comes up in me, and I think in all of us, to find something to hold on to. Maybe it's, okay, well, if by a certain age this will happen, or if I do have this experience, then never doubt. Then some, always never, something to hold on to. And I remember someone saying that this practice is like jumping out of a plane with a parachute. And then first you realize that there's no parachute. And then you realize that there's no ground.
Oh, that's nice.
The mind keeps looking for both.
Yeah.
Parachute and ground.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Oh, thank you.
So yeah, I really feel very identified with the story I'm thinking of on another retreat, for like how I just felt so moved that like just there's nothing left to do, but as a lifelong ardent atheist, prostrate 3 times, take your goddamn refuge. And then, you know? So I set up, like, a little altar. Like, it's nothing, really. It's like a little... a Buddha and, like, a frame with... and I can't remember the Buddha's name. Encapsulated in that frame, and I knocked over the little Buddha to catch it.
You decapitated the Buddha?
Yeah. And so you can, I mean, it's not like the first time, the second time, third time, and then, you know, like, why am I here? It's like, nothing's really changed. I'm still struggling to work some kind of a shit minimum wage job, and so I'm sitting here, and like, if anything happens, it's just going to have to be revisited. But to, I mean, if you're not in a certain kind of space, that it's really, that's just like a wooden plank. There's no, there's nothing, there's no wondrous splendor. That's not like a incredible nail hole, etc.
Yeah, all of it together. And we think, and that's the, one of the things that I think is one of our great delusions in all spiritual practices that I've ever encountered, that somehow these experiences will transform us and fix everything, you know, and we won't be us anymore. You alluded to that the other day, David. And the thing is, we become more and more and more us in this practice. You know, for I so identify with your question, Bill. I, you know, if only the if onlys, right? If only I were a man. That plagued me early on, really, in a tradition where there are very few women. You know, it is hard in the early days, especially, and still, weirdly, I guess sexism still is alive. If only I were taller, if only I were older, I used to think. Now I think if only I were younger. You know, right? It's just on and on and on. And this is what one of the things I love about the when I came across this text by Ling Yun, but you know, you all have your strengths and weaknesses, you all have your stuff, but you should all still do the same practice. You know, pay attention.
I know Bill already said this, but I just feel I have to echo it, and thank you, Bill, for bringing this up. It really sort of makes me realize that, you know, we talk about narratives and dropping the narrative and just being right now, but at certain times of life, anyway, and I feel I'm in one of them right now, one is very, very conscious of it's sort of narrative of a life. Of a lifetime, you know, you know you only get to live so many years, and you are watching yourself get older before you actually were ready to get older, if there is such a thing, and thinking, wait a minute, that was supposed to happen to other people, or later, or something, right? I haven't done all the, I'm not ready for this. So that narrative, I don't even experience it as a narrative, and that's why I wanted to thank you. You know, it's the governing framework of everything is how old I am, how old a person is, right? When something happens to them, it's like a cage I live in. And I didn't realize that even I'm trying to do Zen inside that cage, which is crazy, right? But it's. That's the master narrative, I think, is how long a person lives, right?
For that you've recognized.
Yeah, yourself. For myself, right? And I imagine I'm not the only person, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, I mean, when we talk about people, when we meet people, one of the things we, you know, there's been a lot of talk about, in academic circles, at least in certain quarters, about how gendering is like the first thing we do, right? A baby's born and you say, it's a boy or it's a girl, and that it's, you know, that's the thing that accompanies you through life. But the other thing...
It's a baby.
It's a baby.
The other thing beyond that is, oh, well, you know, that person's sort of 40-ish. Or, oh, you know, that person, that's a young person. Or, oh, that person's probably, you know, between 60 and 70. Or, you know,
it's a really fundamental thing about like who a person is, both thinking about yourself and thinking about other people. And to imagine that that actually need not constrain you, right? To be free of that, that's a remarkable opportunity and really hard.
I love this. I'm blown away by this. That, you know, because I live in that narrative.
Yeah.
And I want to say that also, it is the true form of our life. There really, really is birth and death and a time in between and an approximate number of years, no guarantee. But that, so what you're talking about is both the possibility, tasting the freedom from that constraint to step outside of that narrative, and that there's also the real form of our human life.
You really are as old as you are.
You really are.
They're both true.
They're both true. Yeah.
Well, and then we saw the new Mr. Rogers movie a couple weeks ago, A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood, and Tom Hanks is Mr. Rogers. And one of the things Mr. Rogers said, and I think really believed, is that so often we see children and we value them for who they are going to be. But yet our 11-month-old grandson is clearly complete and already Zen teacher. As that, and thinking about, you know, both this, yes, and he will be different, but the suchness of every moment and the complete possibility and expression, you know, how, as a 67-year-old man, do I express it perfectly, with no comparison? You know, the firewood does not become ash. Dogen said, babies do not become old. Babies are babies. Old man is old man, and complete freedom.
And
they become old.
Yeah, not a problem.
I was going to say, you know, one of the things that I notice in myself and in the conversation is the way that we set up the comparison. If only statements, and this imagined life, some other life, I don't know what it is, but there's some other imagined life that if I could live that imagined life, awakening would be in that life. It's not in this life.
Yeah.
And of course, this is it. This is the only, this is it. This is the awakened life, right here. This is it.
Amazing.
There's nowhere else to look.
Yeah.
The whole thing is a mirage, you know, that there is some other possibility. There is no other possibility.
But there is a video game called Second Life. just say.
Just say.
Jesus meetings.
Yeah. That's what we do. Oh, I once... Yeah, I'm going to say. I was once invited to be part of an online forum. This was in the early days of online stuff before I realized how awful being online is, but that's another story. And I could only be a teacher on this forum if I went to Second Life and created an avatar for myself.
Oh, yeah.
And then they had a temple where I could go and teach.
Oh, no.
And so you know, I'm a good girl. I did this. But it was like, I don't want to teach these avatars. They were all sitting there in the animals and bunnies and like, come on. And then things got out of control. I just quit. I resigned from my Second Life. But it was kind of fun at the beginning to design myself, because I designed a slightly... a different version of myself, an idealist version of myself. My hair always was in place. Or no, I think I'm, yeah, it was, I had hair. I had beautiful robes, you know, I could fly in Second Life. So we don't recommend that. And sadly, or not, maybe good, that fell apart, that particular online forum, because of ethical issues. As you can imagine. But I'm also thinking all through this conversation about Jiaozhou. We talked about him a while back. So here's Jiaozhou, right? So he comes as a young man Who gave that talk? That was a wonderful talk about...
It was probably me.
It might have been Mike Herzog. It was Mike Herzog. It was the other Mike. I always have to have a mic on my right. about Jiajiao with his first teacher, Nanchuan, and you know, being a young 20-year-old, and then stayed for 40 years of discipleship. And at 60, he went on a 20-year pilgrimage, 80 now, and then he started teaching and died at 120. And I always thought, yeah, you know, that's my goal too, to live to 120. But the thing that he said as he was going out on his pilgrimage, I realize now because of Will's teaching in our Dharma dialogue here, it means more than I ever thought it meant. It is something about... So he said, if I meet a 7-year-old who can teach me, I will learn from them. And if I meet an old person who can learn from me, I will teach them. So already looking at age as something to be free of, that the meaning we ascribe to it is not actually the meaning that we hold on to for dear life as a defining factor in who we think we are. So to stop having our second life avatar, but to be really this person. So, with that, let's sit once again.